Hi again, everybody, and welcome to the Amerinds Podcast, episode 167. Today is Thursday, July 23rd, 2009. Today I'm going to tell you a bit about traveling to New Zealand, since I've been talking about living here or moving here. But first, I have some breaking news. This just into the Amerinds Podcast newsroom. The apocalypse has arrived in New Zealand. As you may remember, I've been talking about the Mr. Cheese being a sign of the impending apocalypse. And I saw advertisements for it on TV. I heard that it was available in Christchurch, but I hadn't actually seen it anywhere until today. Today, I innocently went to my local grocery store, and there on the shelf was Mr. Cheese in Tasty and Mild. Now, the label says it's Tatua, which is a would-be New Zealand brand, except that if you turn it over and read the back, in fine letters, it says Made in USA. So it's clearly actually American cheese that's just been labeled for sale in New Zealand. And I noticed that all of the Tasty variety, which is sort of like sharp cheddar in New Zealand speak, was gone, or there's one can left, and the Mild was in abundance. And it was on special, so maybe that had something to do with the sales. But I suspect it's one of those things that a lot of Kiwis will try out of curiosity because they've seen it on American television so much. But I can't imagine it's actually going to take off here. We shall see. But yes, the apocalypse has now arrived. Well, I wanted to tell you a bit about travel in New Zealand because, well, it actually was inspired by a comment to the last episode about the GPS systems. And I'm going to do that, but first, a little bit about something going on in the news. There was a murder trial that just concluded yesterday, and the defendant attempted to use what's called a justification defense. Well, it's not his real name, but that's basically what it is. In his case, he said that his ex-girlfriend provoked him to murder her, to stab her 216 times. The jury didn't agree and found him guilty of murder rather than guilty of manslaughter, and which is a good verdict. Now, this same thing has been used before. In gay context, it's usually called the gay panic defense, where a gay man supposedly makes an overture or a sexual advance to a supposedly heterosexual man who responds by killing the gay man. Now, there, as it happens, just a week or so, well, a little bit more earlier, there was another case where that same defense had been used and the murderer was found guilty of manslaughter. And it was used as well some time back against another gay man, although I can't remember if he was found guilty of murder or manslaughter. In New Zealand, that's all we have. We don't have degrees of murder. Now, the justice minister has said that he wants to review the law with an eye toward removing the justification, the provocation defense. And it's a bit problematic because there could theoretically be circumstances in which somebody is provoked. For example, if somebody has been abused sexually or emotionally, what have you, or a battered wife, for instance, or a sexually abused child, they might theoretically just snap one day and kill their abuser. And are they really morally the same kind of killer as somebody who kills somebody else in cold blood or with the so-called gay panic defense or what have you? I'm not so sure. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Now, one of the things that's been proposed is that they have another category of diminished capacity, that they're still guilty, but not of murder. So they'd get a lesser sentence than somebody who actually commits murder. And then it's also been suggested that we introduce degrees of murder. And there was actually an MP who proposed that about 10 years ago, and it never went anywhere because the legal establishment thought it was a terrible idea, that it would make everything way too complicated. So I don't know, but either way, it looks like the gay panic defense will soon be impossible in New Zealand, and that's a very good thing. But related to that, there is a bit of a controversy because people were talking about this case online. Now, I've talked before about how you can't talk about a criminal case. Well, there are certain restrictions on talking about criminal cases in the media while it's going on, and certainly once the jury is deliberating. Now, in New Zealand, jurors are not sequestered, not when the trial's going on, and nowadays not even when they're deliberating their verdict. So the judge orders them not to pay any attention to newspapers, magazines, television, radio, what have you. And I imagine, if they're not already, they should be telling them not to pay any attention to the internet as well. And that's really what the whole problem is. Some bloggers were talking about the case, including one who's here in New Zealand. And also there was a Facebook group started saying that this murderer was a murderer, which he is. And the thing is that there's nothing, as far as I can see, there's nothing the government can do about the Facebook group, because Facebook is, the servers are in the United States, and it's beyond the jurisdiction of New Zealand law, I think. In the case of the bloggers, it gets a little bit dicier, because very often their servers are also held overseas, and they may live in New Zealand, but where is the place of publication? I mean, none of this is defined in law, because the law was all written before there was an internet. So these are the sorts of things that are going to have to be ironed out. But I just thought it was kind of interesting, and I thought it was it is something that's going to be coming up again, and probably something I'll be talking about in the future. You may remember me talking about the changes to the Copyright Act. Well, that's moving forward now, and they're still talking about, among other things, the cutting off of internet for repeat offenders. And there's a lot of people who are arguing against that, saying that these days the internet is like a utility, like gas, water, power, and you can't just cut it off because people depend on it. Well, I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening about that. At this stage, there's really nothing to report, but it looks like it could heat up. And finally, related to the internet, the government has been experimenting with internet filtering, which is intended to keep don't have my pop filter up, which is intended to keep child pornography out of the country. And Australia has gone further than that. It's a full-scale censorship routine that has been trialed in Australia. But here in New Zealand, they haven't done that, and it's been voluntary up in this stage, and still is voluntary because it would require a law change to make it mandatory. But most of the internet service providers are signing up for this. Now, this is something that may be talked about tomorrow on the Archer Radio Group show, and so I'm not going to say any more about it today. But if it doesn't come up, I'll talk about it in a future episode. Now, on to travel. Now, this, of course, all came up because Chris had left comments two episodes ago, I guess it was, about GPS systems and open source GPS. And I have looked into a little bit more. And while I don't know about the specifics of the map, are used in that, I can say that apparently all the top 10 campgrounds are listed because of some sort of segment or part of the whole system that they use. However, rental cars in New Zealand these days very often come with GPS, or if not, you can request it. Now, that's usually for, name brand car rental companies, but it is often available, so you don't necessarily have to worry about open source maps and all that sort of stuff. However, if you do want to bring your own GPS, then that's certainly an option, is to use the open source maps. Now, that brings up the larger issue of driving in New Zealand. I've talked about this a little bit before, but I'm going to talk about it in a little bit more depth now. If you're planning on driving in New Zealand, obviously, especially North Americans, you need to remember that we drive on the left side of the road and the steering wheel is on the right side of the car. It's not as hard to get used to as you might think it is, and I'll put a link in the show notes for the road code, because it's a really good idea to read up on our road rules before you get here, because they're way different from North America. Not way different, you still stop and things. But it's good to know the signs and what they mean. It's good to understand speed limits and some of the variations, because each place has different rules. And New Zealand's are different from, say, parts of Australia and so on. So it would be a good idea to do it. When you drive in another country outside of your home country, you are supposed to have an international driver's license, which is apparently quite easy to get. It's primarily a formality. And the point of it is it's a universal way for police to know if your foreign license is valid, because they don't know. I mean, if somebody in New Zealand pulls out an Illinois driver's license, the cops here in New Zealand will have no way of knowing if that's a valid license, if it's legitimate, if it's anything. But if you have an international driver's license, it verifies that your license is in fact real and that you are licensed. It's also a good idea to carry your passport with you when you're driving, if you do, just for added identification. But of course, if you have read the road code, you're probably not going to do anything that's going to get you pulled over anyway, are you? It really isn't hard to get used to driving on the other side of the road. I did it fairly easily. The thing to remember is to keep left. That's the main thing. And also, our roads are a bit narrower than Americans are used to. Not the motorways so much, because motorways are motorways. But once you get outside of the main centers and you're out in the countryside, the state highways are just two-lane roads, one lane in each direction, and the lanes are, generally speaking, a bit narrower than Americans are used to. So it is good to take your time. Don't worry if people pass you, big deal. However, if you're driving along, let's say, a winding road, and your traffic's starting to back up behind you, you are required to pull over occasionally and let the traffic pass. You can't just keep going forever, you know, at less than the speed limit and letting traffic back up behind you. It's just not only is it impolite, it's illegal. But it isn't hard to do to drive in the here in New Zealand. If you're going to rent a car, check with your auto insurance and your credit card insurance and so on, because very often your insurance will cover you if you rent a car here in New Zealand, because all the insurances are optional. Now, there are some roads in New Zealand where you cannot take a rental car because no insurance will cover it, and the rental company will usually tell you where they are. There's one in the South Island, Skipper's Canyon Road, for instance, where you cannot take a rental car. But there are very few of those. But back to GPSs, because it's related to the driving. The problem that could come up, no matter how you do it, is what we call paper roads. And those are roads that exist on paper, but not in reality. And generally speaking, you could think of them as a right-of-way that the local council or what have you owns in case they ever want to build a road. But very often, they're fenced off, and they're like in the middle of a farmer's paddock or something. And so you obviously can't drive on them. And occasionally, some of the GPS systems will direct you down this paper road. Now, as I understand it, they are getting better about that. And so this caveat may no longer be needed. But it is theoretically possible. Also, most of the people, I believe all the people who will be hearing this podcast, my usual listeners anyway, won't need a visa to come to New Zealand. You can get that at the airport. There may be some countries where that's not true, but certainly United States, Canada, Britain, Japan, certain other countries, you don't need a visa. So you can just get there, and then you get generally speaking, 3 months, so you can stay in the country, sometimes less. You obviously have to have a round-trip ticket and sufficient money to last you while you're here, just as in any other country. It's no different. It's also a good idea to know the address of the place you're going to be staying when you arrive, because you have to put that on the landing card when you arrive in Auckland, because you probably will be arriving in Auckland. And that's true in the U.S. as well. When you land, you have to say where you're going, and they record all this stuff. But it's actually not so much to track you down. It's more for statistical information, because they want to know the migration patterns. They want to know where people are going for statistical data and that kind of thing, as I understand it anyway, as far as I know. So, okay, you've decided whether or not you're driving in New Zealand. You've gotten your insurance all sorted and whatnot. Oh, speaking of insurance, check your health insurance policy to see if it covers you when you're in another country. If it doesn't, I strongly recommend you get traveler's insurance, because foreigners or people on temporary visas of any kind aren't covered by the National Health Scheme here in New Zealand. So you would have to pay for anything if you got sick or injured in the country. So it's a good idea to make sure your insurance is sorted before you get here. And that's actually advice for going to any country, regardless of what it is. Make sure that your insurance will cover you, or get special insurance to cover you. Now, you're here. What do you see? Well, that depends on what you want to see, obviously. I mean, that's a vague answer, but New Zealand has a little bit of everything. It has beautiful scenery. It has action adventure. It has all kinds of things. The North Island has most of the people. The South Island has a lot of the scenery. Not all of it, but quite a lot of it. The Southern Alps are running along the western side of the South Island, and they're absolutely beautiful. So are the Remarkables, which is actually related to mountains down in the south of the South Island, around Queenstown and so on. If you're coming in our winter, which is Northern Hemisphere summer, there's a lot of winter activities in Queenstown, skiing in Queenstown, and also in the central North Island on the volcanoes. Mount Rapehu, for instance, is, I believe, the only active volcano that people can ski on in the world. And if you're into that sort of thing, I don't ski myself, ski, snowboard, whatever. But those are options. And throughout the year, because the climate, especially in the North Island, is fairly mild, you can do a lot of things year-round. But in the summer is a time when it's more conducive if you want to go hiking, which we call tramping. And there are huts that you can stay in along the way. And you can find out all about this sort of stuff online. There is a YouTube channel for the tourism to New Zealand. I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. So you can sort of see some of the, maybe not necessarily the sites, but at least see some of the tourism promotional videos, which may or may not be helpful. But it may give you some ideas of the parts of the country that you want to see. because it does show quite a few bits. Now, a lot of people, of course, first became interested in New Zealand in recent years because of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And one of those places is Hobbiton, which is actually in a town called Matamata in the Waikato. Not all that far from where Nigel and I used to live. And when the movie was over, they took down the sets and went away, but they sort of left the holes in the ground, and that's what the tourists were seeing. Well, Hobbiton is actually being rebuilt, and the road where you see Gandalf coming down in his donkey cart and Frodo jumps up on the wagon, that road is being recreated as well in getting ready for the filming of the two-part movie The Hobbit. And so you actually, if you do go there, you actually be able to see the actual set in context, which actually I think makes it a little bit easier to visualize if it's like there. But there are guidebooks that you can get to see the other Lord of the Rings sites in New Zealand if you're so inclined. Most of them aren't CGI'd. They actually are pretty much as they appeared in the movie, apart from some obvious things like cities and stuff like that. But the actual, the outside scenery, a lot of that was just as is. Now, of course, there are other things to see, too, depending on what your interests are. And I'm not going to go into any great detail about the things there are to see because, as I said, it depends on your interest and also depends on the time of year that you're here. A great many tourists will go to Rotorua in the North Island, upper central North Island, which is a geological active area, a bit like Yellowstone in a sense because there's geysers and mud, boiling mud and all that sort of stuff. And there are things you can do there that are cheaper than others. There's all kinds of things to see in that area. And, of course, if you're interested in Maori culture, there's quite a bit in Rotorua and there's quite a bit in other places as well. If you want any specific advice on any of that, I can certainly provide it, and I could actually talk about specific things on the podcast. But I don't want to go, again, I don't want to go into specific details because there are too many variables in terms of what people might be interested in and what time of year that you're here. So I'll just leave that that part alone for now. But those are some of the things to think about when you're coming to New Zealand, the driving, the insurance, and the GPS situation and all that. The main thing, I suppose, to think about is how you get here, because it's a long flight from Los Angeles. It's even longer from London. And you might want to think about ways to break it up. I mean, you could fly by way of North Americans could fly by way of Hawaii. And I think it's about an 8-hour flight from Hawaii to Auckland. Or you could fly by way of Polynesia, which a lot of people do because it's cheaper that way. I think it's about the same flight, maybe a bit longer. And French Polynesia, I mean. And those sorts of things. Now, I've never done any of that. I've only flown direct from Los Angeles. And it's about a 16, 19-hour flight. I can't remember. And it's a long flight. But I actually have strategies that I do when I'm taking that flight. I have 2 glasses of red wine with dinner to help me sleep. I also take garlic for a few days beforehand to keep my blood all thinned so that you don't get deep vein thrombosis. Also drink a lot of water. These days, you can't bring water through security, but in most airports, you can buy bottled water once you get on the other side of security, and that's what I recommend you do, rather than having to jump up every so often and get a glass of water. Just drink lots of water so you don't dehydrate. And these sorts of things help you get through the flight. And if you can, sleep. These days, there are headphones you can get which will dampen out the noise, and some people swear by them. These sorts of things really do help. And just don't plan on doing much of anything on that long flight. Air New Zealand will take good care of you if you fly Air New Zealand. I can't swear for the other airlines anymore because the only other airline I've flown is United, and it doesn't fly to New Zealand anymore. But there are things you can do, and it's certainly worth giving it a thought. Don't be put off by the length of the flight because it really does go a bit faster than it sounds, especially if you're able to sleep. Welcome back. From your perspective, no time has passed at all, but from my perspective, an entire day because of the space-time continuum rupture that just occurred and is now sealed. No, I actually started this yesterday and didn't have a chance to finish it, and now I'm going to. But first, I have some breaking news. This just into the Airman's Podcast newsroom. I've tried Mr. Cheese, and it tastes like crap. Yes, it's true. I tried the mild variety and had found out that it tasted just like Cheese Whiz, which of course tastes nothing like cheese at all. So that mystery is now solved, and I don't ever have to worry about that again, thankfully. And now I'm going to go on to comments, and I have a voicemail message.
Hello? Get off my phone! Get off my phone, you little pinhead! Get off my phone! I'm going to lose my mind today!
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Hi, Arthur. Just calling to keep your phone line active. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you, mystery caller, whoever you are. My phone line is now secured until the third week in August, which is pretty cool. Now I'm going over to the written comments, and the first one is by Apollonius, who said, oddly enough, the new voicemail music was absolutely awesome. It had me laughing rather hard at the office, and I said, good, that was my intention. And now, of course, I had another opportunity to play it. If you want to hear it, you can call and leave a message, too, at 206-666-5172. Although you won't hear it till the next podcast, but anyway. The next comment was from Roger Green, who said, I suppose I could just look it up, but I thought I'd just ask an expert instead. Roger, that's your first mistake. How many New Zealand expats are black Americans, or for that matter, black Africans? What is the skinny regarding racism toward foreign-born people of color? And I said, I had a quick look that turned out to be not so quick, and still couldn't find an answer. I think this has to do with the way the statistical data is collected. Immigration records country of origin, not race, and the census measures race in very broad terms. There may be some data hidden somewhere, but it'll take me a while to find it. I can say from anecdotal evidence that there don't appear to be many black people from Africa or the U.S., but they do seem to be growing in numbers in Auckland, at least based solely on observation, which may be totally wrong. The larger subject of racism or prejudice against non-white immigrants is a whole topic on its own. And it actually probably is a topic that I should look at for a future episode. But what I can tell you in general is that the prejudice that I have seen in New Zealand tends to be directed primarily toward Asian immigrants, particularly ones from China or Southeast Asia, but also people from India or Pakistan, Sri Lanka, places like that. There just aren't that many people of African descent, whether they're from Africa or from the United States. And they do tend to stand out a bit when you see them. When I first came to New Zealand, every time I saw one, which was pretty rare, I instantly thought they were American and wanted to go up and talk to them because I just don't find that many Americans to talk to still. But I resisted the temptation because it's entirely possible they were from Africa. And what would have made myself look like a right royal idiot, assuming they were American. But in general, I would say that there's not that much prejudice against people, foreigners of color as such, apart maybe from Asians. And as I said, though, that's a topic in itself. But as a little aside, today I was in a shop and I heard a man talking to the shop owner, and he had an American accent. And I made the mistake of asking, where are you from? The American responded, from here. And this is why if I hear an American accent out and about anywhere, I never ask that question, because I usually get a stupid answer, or they look at me with great suspicion, like, why are you asking this? And it's not worth it. So as a result, even if I hear an American accent, I usually don't say a word. I figure if they want to say something when they hear me speak, that's their business, but I'm just not going to go there. But that was my adventure today. And that's the adventure for this week, actually. I will be back next week. There's a two political episode next week, and there'll be at least one Amarin's next week as well. I was on the Archer Radio Group show that is out today. Well, it's Thursday in the U.S., Friday here. And I think that's about it. I wanted to bid a fond adieu to QCast Connection, which is ceasing podcasting, and also congratulate Tom the Ramble Redhead on 300 episodes, which is he's just about to release that in a couple more episodes, I think. And that's it for this week. I'll be back next week with more fun and frivolity. Until then, have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amarin's Podcast at amarinspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amarinspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.